we're very excited to talk to our next guest, a bit of a friend of the show, and we had her in about a year ago, probably
well, we think
a bit
it
longer.
Is. We're not sure now.
None of us can remember. We had a great time.
Yes. Yeah. And you are from one of our favourite organisations in Melbourne, in the world, would you say, David?
Absolutely.
Isabel Crombie from NGV. You are a curator.
Yes.
And you're very talented.
Of this exhibition. Yeah.
And you're here to talk about Brave New World, Australia 1930s, but I'm sure we're going to get onto some other things as
juicy
well.
Juicy topics,
some
yes.
very juicy topics. But for people that missed your last interview with us, can you go back a little bit, you know, when the art bug got you and how you got into becoming a curator?
Oh, my God, that's way back.
It is. It's a bit of
well,
a back.
Well, you know, my mother used to say that she claimed complete credit for it because she used to take me around to the British Museum when I was a baby and go, Wedgwood, darling, Wedgwood. But I don't know. I guess the art bug hit me when I was in my early 20s and I was at university. And I hadn't got a clue about what I was going to do, and someone suggested I do a fine arts degree. And
where, so whereabouts?
ANU in Canberra.
Okay.
Yep.
So you're from that part of the world, or?
Well, kind of. Both my parents are Australian. I was born in London. We moved back. My dad got a job in Canberra, and that's where I went to university.
Okay.
So I was very fortunate because when I finished my course there, and it was only the second year of the arts degree, they were employing people at the National Gallery in Canberra. And so I was a little junior baby, and I started in the Australian prints department, but I soon moved over to photography because that was the thing that I adored. And really I stayed in that field both in Canberra and then subsequently down here in Melbourne for a very long time. About 4 years ago when Tony Elwood became director, uh-huh. he asked whether I'd like to become assistant director and take on a bigger kind of brief. So now I manage about 150 staff.
Wow.
In the curatorial and collection management areas. And
yeah.
every now and then I get to kind of branch out and go back into being a curator again, which is what I've done jointly with Eleanor Taylor with this show.
And you were in last time for a wonderful, just a one-piece exhibition.
Highly unusual.
But you created a whole exhibition around it. What was it?
It was called Whistler's Mother, and
I think
enough,
I've heard
it was
of
about
that.
Whistler's Mother. But it turns out, you know, we've got such incredible depth at the gallery. We've got 75,000 artworks, and so we could draw together an exhibition around just that one artwork that looked at the decorative arts influences, the prints, the drawings, and the kind of the way it connected with Australian art and impacted on Australian art. So that was a real privilege to work on that.
Now, Tony Elwood, he's been there, what, 4 years, you were saying?
Five years now.
He's had a pretty big impact on the gallery, hasn't
it? I would say so. I mean, it feels like we're in hyperdrive mode. It's fantastic. You know, I've been at the gallery since 1988 and I always thought it had the most amazing potential, but that I wasn't sure that it ever quite realised it. And I think now you can start to say that it has. In fact, last night we had the NGV Gala, which again reached a kind of a high watermark for the institution. So that was a fundraiser for our fashion and textiles department, and all the glitterati were there in their best frocks for the Dior exhibition. So it was an incredibly special night.
Mm. And you had some big names there too.
Big names. Nicole Kidman was there. I kind of bumped shoulders with Nicole, so I felt quite good about myself. I don't know how she felt, but I felt quite good. And there were some wonderful people there to support our activities, along with some amazing kind of flowers. We had 30,000 flowers.
Wow.
Decorating the kind of the halls by Flowers Vazette. They were very generous sponsors and French champagne.
And you would have seen firsthand, you know, I guess the renewed focus on fashion as art.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, what do you think about that?
Well, I think one of the best shows I've ever been to, of course, you know, apart from the NGV, was the Alistair McQueen exhibition at the Met. And that just was one of those moments where my mouth dropped open. I mean, it was so extraordinary.
Mm.
And I think Dior, in its own way, does that as well, you know, because you go back to one of the very kind of basic forms in fashion history, which is the kind of the A-line skirt and the nipped-in waist. Which opens the exhibition. And then you go through and you look at the kind of the different codes of Dior, the way that Monsieur Dior had various things that he loved, you know, the flower and the 18th century. Then you go through a wonderful atelier room where you've got, for the first couple of weeks of the show, actually some of the Dior people making the toiles, which are the sort of the foundational garments that on which the haute couture is based.
So they're right there in front of you, so you can stand there looking at them sewing.
I mean, they're a wonderful group of people. They've been there for the last month fitting out the mannequins, you know, adding in hips where necessary, and boobs where necessary, or whittling them away, you know, because they have 19-inch waists, a lot of these garments, which is, I don't think I ever had a 19-inch waist, even as a child. But,
But being that close to the dresses, you can see the detail.
Yes.
The detail is just extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. And it works through the various designers who worked in the House of Dior, who were, you know, all took it in different kinds of directions. So it's absolutely fascinating.
You are on Sunday Arts Magazine Joy 94.9 and David, Brennan and Neil with you till 5pm. And we've got Isabel Crombie from the NGV and we were just talking about the wonderful new Dior exhibition at NGV International. But let's stick with a bit of fashion and talk about Brave New World, Australia 1930s, and fashion plays a quite a big part in that. Mm. So tell us a little bit about your co-curatorial experience with this one.
Yeah, well, I've always thought that the 1930s in Australia was a fascinating period and a little bit kind of underrepresented in the arts. People look at it in terms of Art Deco, certainly, and occasionally they look at it in terms of the Depression. But what we wanted to do with this show was really suggest some of the great range in what was a very passionate and a very contested kind of decade, bookended by the Great Depression at one end and the Second World War at the other. And I guess what we've done in this show, which is perhaps a bit different, is we've really looked at the great diversity of art that was produced. So both from the most conservative manifestations right through to abstraction and sort of the beginnings of surrealism. And we've divided that into various thematics. So we look at the utopian city, we look at the modern woman, we look at body culture, the pastoral era, kind of ideas of the self that kind of were generated in this period, and it ends up with the Depression. And all of it kind of pivots around this idea of the Brave New World, which is obviously Huxley's book. And I'm not sure if your listeners know, but that book, which seems so kind of foundational these days, was actually banned when it was brought into Australia under a fairly rigorous interpretation of the Decency Act. And so it was rounded up and it was burnt.
Wow.
But it's fascinating for one reason, which is because Max Dupain, the great photographer, he actually did a photograph called Brave New World at the time that it was a banned book. So he's immediately kind of putting himself into this quite kind of contested dialogue that happened at the period.
Because it would have been a hard period for art with the Depression and you know, like sort of edging towards this, you know, the Second World War. So, you know, like what made art special back then? And, you know, were there cutting edge boundaries?
Sure. I mean, I think the thing that made art special we found when we started to look at this period was that people really engaged with the social issues of the time in a way that maybe they don't quite so much these days, I'd have to say. So, you know, we're coming out of the First World War where, you know, 60,000 people in Australia were killed. There was a lot of trauma associated with it. And people started to talk about what was it that made Australia? Where should Australia go? It felt like Europe, in their terms, was degenerate and that there needed to be kind of a break both with the past and with Europe. And so they started to talk about a whole new Australian being forged. Now, that Australian was a white Australian, you know, it has to be said. And they were, in these terms, they were forged from British stock, but they were kind of bred on the beaches and in the pastoral areas of Australia. And so they were kind of this really strong, resolute Australian body. And so, you know, underpinning that, however, is this idea, much darker idea, of eugenics or selective breeding. And I guess, you know, one of the kind of intellectual jumping off points for this show for me was a doctorate that I did back in 2000, which was looking at this interwar period through the work of Max Dupain. And Max Dupain's father was one of the first gymnasium owners in Australia, and he was a dyed-in-the-wool eugenicist, both in this interwar period but also after the Second World War when the awful outcome of these kind of you know, adherence to this pseudoscience became so apparent in Germany. Mm. And so Max, I'm not saying that Max is a eugenicist himself, but he does, like many artists in this period, question what it is to be Australian, particularly through the lens of the body. And in his instance, it's the white body. So, you know, it's a fascinating period. And I guess someone like Max, we've always thought of him as being a quintessential modernist. But in fact, we argue that he's a kind of a classical modernist because he sees the way forward, ironically, as going back to the kind of Greek and Roman period. And that Australians can kind of bring in this kind of vital essence into their lives, which he felt had seeped away during the First World War through association with that classical past, but also through spending time on the beaches of Australia.
Yeah, because one of the images that you used quite a bit for this exhibition is that very famous beach photo, isn't it?
The Sunbaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, when you start to look at it, Max said it was a completely spontaneous image. Well, it may have been spontaneous, but there's a lot behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And so it has this very nationalist resonance in the terms of what was happening in the 1930s. And, you know, that's a kind of a white body completely in possession of the landscape, mm. looking a little bit like, you know, kind of Uluru, you know, this white kind of male body. But it also has this resonance of, you know, at the time they used to call it that people were sun slain, that they'd go and lie on the beach and they get kind of so dozy by the sun that they'd look like they were sort of dead. Mm. And, you know, that kind of ties us back into the idea of the war. But this person isn't kind of dead. They're kind of get up in a minute and kind of jump back into the surf again.
And it looks quite refreshing and quite... It looks very now, doesn't it, that photograph?
Yes.
Especially with your background in photography as well. You know, like it's timeless, that photo, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the interesting things we found when we were researching for this show is how many people at this moment are talking about the links between the 1930s politically and the period in which we live. Mm. You know, this kind of desire to look nationally rather than internationally, for instance. You know, obviously we don't have a Great Depression, but there is that kind of, a similar kind of sensation in the 30s. So I think it does give this a kind of contemporary resonance, which is something that I love about shows. Mm. You know, even historical shows. You want to know how it kind of affects you now.
Yeah.
So I guess the other thing that runs through the show, which is interesting, is the number of women who came to the fore in this period as artists. You know, the woman at that time, the modern woman, as she was called, was like a more serious version of her 1920s flapper cousin. So she was often living on her own. She wasn't having children necessarily. She was working. She was sometimes an artist or involved in creativity. And she was both marketed to by people at the time, but she was also very much criticised. There's a writer called William Bailebridge who refers to women abandoning their duties as, to quote him, the sacred vessels of maternity, which reminds me of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes, exactly.
Which someone said to me I should go and watch, and I've been completely addicted to it. But it's got that similar sort of resonance of the duty of a woman is actually to kind of continue the race. So it's, you know, it's a fascinating period, I have to say.
Mm. And did you sort of have that idea, you know, how long ago did you start putting this together?
Well, I guess really it goes back to 2000 when I started doing my doctorate. And then I started to work with Eleanor Taylor, a curator at the gallery, and it took off in all sorts of different ways. And one of the ways the show took off is we started to work with a woman called Rachel Fensham, who's up at the University of Melbourne, who's a dance historian.
Okay.
And we saw the potential to move the show into this whole other direction, which is around the body in motion. Mm-hmm. So that's been really fascinating to kind of bring out of the archive three or four of these great women choreographers who are completely unheard of today, including one called Louisa Lightfoot. Imagine me called Lightfoot if you're a choreographer. I love people whose names indicate what it is that they do. So, you know, we had a lot of fun with this show and a lot of discoveries along the way.
Excellent. It's running now.
It is running now, and it's running until October, so people have got plenty of time to go down and enjoy it, hopefully.
Right.
And it is at the Ian Potter Centre.
It's at the
NGV
Ian Potter
Australia.
Centre, yes. So if they can rip themselves away from Dior, please go to the NGV and have a look at this show.
Now, just ever so quickly, something major's coming up later in the year in the international, NGV International. What is it?
Yes, we can't rest on our laurels at the NGV. We've got to keep kind of trucking on. And for the last 4 years, a group of us at the gallery, big group, have been working on a triennial. So Melbourne Now was that amazing show we did about 5 years ago, which looked
at... Was that 5 years ago?
Yeah, it was. Wow. It was ages... Or have I lost a grip on time? 4 or 5 years ago, somewhere around there. And that was a look at what happened in our city of Melbourne in a contemporary sense. We've now broadened out to look at what's happening internationally. So we're bringing in this amazing group of artists and designers and architects, and we're taking over pretty much every space and nook and cranny in NGV International. It's a big free show for people.
Wow.
So we're just really hoping people are going to get excited by it. It's got some amazing things in it. The other day we were standing around looking at the plans, and we said, like, if we came in here just not knowing anything, we'd just faint at the front door because it's so exciting.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do a special on it.
Fabulous.
A 2-hour special on it on Sunday Arts Magazine.
Yes.
So I can't wait to find out more about it.
Well, I won't say any more then.
All right.
I'll just leave it at that.
Okay, leave it at that. And it's in November.
Yes.
It opens in November. Yes. Brilliant. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Absolute pleasure.
It's always a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a pleasure for me too. Thank you.
Good on you.
We love it. And how can people get more information on the... Brave New World, Australia 1930s.
Well, they can check out the website, or they can, and there's actually a symposium coming up in a couple of weeks, so that'll give them some in-depth information, or they can buy the book. Please, buy the book.
That's great advice. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine, Joy 94.9, wonderful Isabel Crombie from NGV in Melbourne. You're on Sunday Arts Magazine on Joy 94.9.